Everybody, welcome to the Two Woke Nerds podcast. I am your host, Raymond Summerlin, and I am joined, as I am every week, by my very good friend, my very own chocolate bear, Mr. Gerald Goodridge. What's up, G?
Not too much, man. I am just sitting here trying not to listen to too much Gangstar, because that'll happen. You'll fall down a rabbit hole really fast.
Yeah, it's funny. We talked last week when we were talking about Comic-Con and what some of our takeaways about how perfect Netflix music choices were in their trailers that they had. You had Nirvana, Come As You Are, in the Defenders one, and then you had ODB, Shimmy Shimmy Ya. You had that in the Luke Cage one, and then some amazing news came out, I think almost like right after we finished recording. And what was that, Gerald?
That all of the episodes of the Luke Cage Netflix series are going to be named after Gangstar songs, which is awesome. And they released, I'm looking for the songs for the first three episodes because they released those. Having trouble locating them
so
on the internet.
Mass Appeal's got to be on there, right?
I believe I'm looking for it.
And Full Clip. And those are the only Gangstar songs I think I know. Like, I'm ashamed to say that. Because I know that I know in history they were so they were so like influential in the East Coast. Mm-hmm. And East Coast, Nas is God, right? So like so like all of that stuff, I know that they were influential.
Yeah.
But I don't know much of them. But if I was naming the show, it'd only be two. They would just repeat those. Two
alternate.
Songs or whatever.
The first three episodes are Moment of Truth, Code of the Streets, and Who's Gonna Take the Weight. So I'm assuming those two songs that you mentioned, which are classics, are going to be, that's kind of like doing a Beatles album naming convention and not having Abbey Road.
Yeah.
So you've got to have those ones on there.
I like that you're comparing Gangstar to the Beatles. I like that quite a lot.
Influential music.
In the article that you sent me that they talked about this, they had to make note that ODB was from Wu-Tang Clan. Who reading this article does not know that?
Who reading that article on OKPlayer.com, which is known for its support and pubbing of the underground and not-so-mainstream hip-hop scene, doesn't know that ODB is from Wu-Tang. But granted, ODB passed away before most of the people that are listening to music now were even born. So
yeah.
You got to give a little credit for that.
Is it really been that long?
It's been a minute. It was 2000 something. Granted, it's 2000 something now.
Oh yeah, way back in 2000.
Yeah, 2004.
2004.
It's been 12 years.
When did Ghetto Superstar come out?
I don't know. Let's find out.
Because Ghetto Superstar was such an important part of my high school days.
1999.
1990. Oh my God, we are old.
We are very old, Raymond.
Did you see? There was a 20-year. I forget which album. There was a 20-year anniversary of a UGK album. Which album was it? 20-year.
Oh my gosh! Now you put me on the spot.
I forget which one, but I saw it and it just made me real sad. That UGK had made an album 20 years ago.
It's it seems like every week I fall down a musical rabbit hole because of something we randomly talk about on the show, and now it's going to be UGK. And I don't 20 years.
Oh, it was Ride and Dirty. Ride and Dirty turned 20.
Yeah.
Oh man. I'm an old man.
You and me both, Raymond.
Well, with that sad thought about my ever-present mortality pushing us forward, let's get into the show. We're going to talk about Star Trek today. Star Trek, I even forget which one Star Trek is this. This is the Beyond one, right?
Beyond, yes.
Star Trek. There's so many stupid Star Trek names. I still like Star Trek Discovery because of STD, but I'll go with that one forever. But Star Trek Beyond, the next installment in the J.J. Abrams Star Trek, which I think you and I have similarly meh kind of thoughts about it. So we'll get the why.
Spoiler alert, Raymond. Spoiler alert.
Well, I'm just saying that I think that that's a good teaser because I believe it's Rotten Tomatoes is like at 80%. And I've yet to... that blows my mind. And so we'll talk about it and we'll get into it. But first, let's do some news. So, I mean, we're going to continue on with this Netflix. Netflix had a good showing at Comic-Con. They brought out the Luke Cage movie choices. Now they went to, I believe, TCA, right? The Television Critics Association. And they said that there'll be no more new seasons of their Marvel property. So no season two of Jessica Jones, no season two of Luke Cage, Iron Fist, no season three of Daredevil until they finish The Defenders, which I believe is supposed to come out in 2018. Do you think that's a good decision, or why are they making this decision?
I think they're making this decision so they can get on with the first phase. I think, and maybe this is just me kind of speculating this, but I feel like maybe they were still a little unsure about how the other series were going to work, how they were going to land. So they're like, Daredevil was really successful, so let's get another good season of that under our belt, see if we can do this twice. And then Jessica Jones also hit. And so I think when you're two for two, you got to finally take the big shot, right? It's kind of, not to take a sports analogy, but after two heat checks, I feel like you're on for the night, so go ahead and put up the three.
Yeah, just J.R. Smith it, take your shirt off. And you know, see what happens.
See how much heart you got. And so, yeah, I think, and I really think they're, especially if you look at the trailer, or I guess it's more of a motion poster, whatever they did for the Defenders, it looks very clear that the hand is going to play a part in it. There's very few reasons why you have a giant hand in that motion poster, that trailer, other than if the hand is getting involved. So I think they finally have established the hand as a credible threat. And so I think you've done a lot of establishing work. Your establishing work is there. And so now you establish your other two characters and you let them battle it out.
Yeah. And to your point, the fact that Stick's voice is very clearly heard at the end,
yep,
you know, says that that's where they're going. And Daredevil's obviously already met them.
Yep.
And there's no place further for him to go, I suppose, in his battle. And I think that, you know, putting them all together can act as a springboard or an accelerator for the other storylines, you know, for your season two of Jessica Jones or whatever. Because season two of Daredevil, while good, I liked it, it seemed like a lot of the characters had nowhere to go. Mm-hmm. Like everything that they were doing with the secondary character, it was almost like it was the first half of the season was a launching pad for the Punisher. In the second half of the season, we got to delve into Elektra and Stick and Hand and stuff, and the Hand and stuff like that. But, you know, the other characters, they just seemed like they were, you know, Foggy just seemed like he was just there.
Yeah.
And it kind of didn't work. So maybe they need something to get this story moving forward, and then they can come back and do these individual stories and go a little further with them. So I think it's a good idea. I think it makes sense.
Yeah, I think they had about because it was, what, a 13-episode season for season
two? Something like that.
And I think they had a solid, like, 7 episodes worth of plot in that. Like, and so I think you're right. You can only do so much with the same characters if you're building to something. That's kind of why they finally had to just bite the bullet and do the Avengers. You know, we're like, okay, we're on. We got our second Iron Man movie out there. The bubble still hasn't burst. Screw it, let's just do it. And so, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think there's only so much groundwork you can lay. There's only so much foundation that you can lay before building the house. And so I think they finally got a very good foundation. I think people are really bought into this character and to this part of the universe. I mean, you got people that aren't even into, you know, again, into this kind of story, and they're excited for it. So I think you've just got it. They finally got to pull the trigger on it.
And kind of speaking of a show or a series that's in the same boat, Game of Thrones, long rumored that Game of Thrones would be finishing after 8 seasons. They'll have season 7 next year, which is going, we're going to have to wait longer to get, and is also only 7 episodes. But it's a, I know, Gerald just rolled his eyes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It makes me so sad.
It's terrible.
Only 7 episodes. But that it is going to end after season 8, which I probably will be just be 7 episodes as well. Yeah. I love the show. Absolutely love the show. I think this is excellent news because they're there. They've reached the end. Everything that needs to happen for this show to end, for the kind of narrative arc that they've been going on since season 1 to reach its natural destination, all of those wheels, all of those gears are already in motion. Dany's already on the boats. Cersei's already, you know, done this horrible, evil Cersei thing she's going to do. Jon and Sansa have already taken back Winterfell. All of the wheels that they need to have turn are turning, and so there's no reason for them to drag this out. So I'm excited that they're going to stick to this plan despite the show's success and end it when it should naturally end.
Yeah, and I think that's the big thing, is not letting a show drag on for too long is something that takes a stroke of genius. I think HBO has of any of the people that are producing TV, I almost said networks, they're not a network, of any of the networks, for lack of a better term, has done a really good job of allowing shows to end at their logical point. You can say what you want about Sopranos maybe being a season or two too long. But outside of that, I mean, they've really like, okay, what story do you want to tell? Cool. Create a good story around it. Let's do it. I mean, you see that with The Wire. The Wire was so successful, it could still be running if they wanted it to be. Like, no, you've got 4, maybe 5 seasons of content, story you want to tell. Great. Then tell your 5 seasons. I think you see that with Oz.
They had 4 seasons. That's because the dock workers, we could have all done without the dock workers.
Go back and rewatch season 2. I think people crap on season 2 unnecessarily. I legitimately think season 2 is really cool.
I like Ziggy a lot.
Who doesn't like Ziggy?
Everybody in the show didn't like Ziggy.
Well, what people watching the show didn't like Ziggy. I loved all the stuff with Frank. Like that was some tragic stuff on the level of Wallace and the falling out of the Stringer, and just all of that. Like it was. Yeah. Anywho, took it a hard left turn.
We went down Wire Avenue.
Yeah, you see it happen with you see it with Dexter, right? Dexter is like a prime example of a show that went on 2 or 3 seasons too long. You see it with a show like Supernatural that had a logical conclusion. It literally had a series finale in season 5. Like
you see it with a show that every episode of this podcast is named, uses the naming convention of, because we love it so much. But
yes.
Scrubs.
Yes.
Scrubs took 3 seasons longer to end than it should have. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it happens.
And so I think it's good that, okay, we know what story we want to tell. There's a logical conclusion. We're not going to lost this thing and just add in extra things just to keep it going. We know where we're going. We know we're almost there. We need 15 episodes to clinch it. Give us what we need.
And the reason I'm really not, I think you're exactly right. And the reason I don't really care is because it's not like this universe is going to disappear off of television.
No.
There's no way that HBO just lets this universe disappear. There will be plenty of Westerosian content on HBO for the next several years. I have some great pitches. Like, I'm going to just start calling up Benioff and Weiss and be like, hey, I got some ideas. Making the theater troupe. I think that would be a quality one. The real scorpion wranglers of Dorne.
Okay.
Where do they get all those scorpions from? They're always torturing people with scorpions. Who has all these scorpions? The deadliest shuck, the oyster sellers of Braavos. Like there are so many beautiful, beautiful shows that can be made here. Just those 3 shows will definitely be made, but there will be other shows that are going to be made on HBO. This universe is not disappearing by any stretch. Let's just do an entire show about the Sword of the Morning. Would anybody be angry about seeing Sir Arthur Dayne just throwing his swords around willy-nilly?
I don't think, no. People would love that. I would love to see a Robert's Rebellion prequel series, like
That'd
talking
be
about
amazing.
Legitimate things.
The Deadliest Shuck is a great idea.
Yeah, so or like a Dunkin' Egg spinoff. They've been talking about that for 3 years now. I would love to see a Robert's Rebellion prequel that just ends with Jaime burying his sword into the Mad King, and that's where it ends. Like, that's your finale, because you know it's like, you know where it's going to end up, but you just want to see it happen. I think it's great that they're ending it. It's the best news about Game of Thrones I've heard all summer.
Absolutely. The fact that it's going to take so long to get there is
well, yeah, that's
the less best news that I've heard about it all summer.
Grammar.
Yeah, I know. I feel like it added an effect there, the less best.
I like it.
Rhetoric. The next.
I got nothing.
The next bit of news is something that really, like, when I saw it on the feed, it didn't really matter to me. But then I got to thinking about it and go, huh, this is kind of interesting. And that is the news that they are working on a Rocketeer sequel/reboot, except that instead of the Rocketeer, Second, right? That was his name? Second, was that his name?
I think so. Yeah, that feels right.
It's going to be a female-led Rocketeer is going to take over after he disappears fighting the Nazis. I know this movie has a cult following. I haven't seen it in a really long time. Like, I haven't seen this movie since Ghetto Superstar came out. Like, it's been a long time since I've seen this movie. I don't remember it being very good. I know that might engender some anger in my Twitter mentions, but I do not remember that movie being very good. But I do think it's interesting they're remaking it. What do you think?
Yeah, I liked this movie. Again, it's been probably too long for me to say that I don't have the nostalgia goggles on it. So I would love to rewatch it. But I think it's really cool the direction that they're going. It's a moderately confusing, but they're doing the female led reboots. I would love for us to do just a series of what movies should we do with female led reboots to piss people off. Maybe that's a whole show where we don't have anything else to talk about. But it's gonna be take place 6 years following the original. Sicord has disappeared fighting the Nazis, and this is where things start to get a little weird. A young African American female takes over the mantle. So I wonder
in 1948 or whatever, young African American female.
I think it'd be 1942. would be if I remember correctly. So yeah. And you know, like, not just that, like the setting, yeah, still can't eat at the same counters, but you can save us from the Nazis. Got to use the back door, but you can definitely fly into Germany and fight the Nazis with a jetpack that's experimental. I wonder, like, how much of the Riri Williams Iron Man influence has influenced the direction of this, because it's hard to not. Connect and correlate the two. And so I wonder how much of a correlation is there. And so the other thing that really confuses me is when you read the actual press release about it, it says that she's trying to keep people from stealing technology that could prove to be a turning point in the Cold War. And so I wonder how much of this is going to be like an alternate future where like the advent of the Rocketeer turned World War II in a different direction and things accelerated historically at a pace faster than they were.
So that's so civil rights happened in 1941 and that's maybe. How in 1942.
So basically in 3 years, we went from World War II through the Cold War, through the civil rights movement, and we're good to go.
I now that I think more about it, I'm completely out on this.
Yeah, it seems really, really bad.
What really upsets me about this character is that Brendan Fraser was born to play this character. If there was ever a character that Brendan Fraser should have played, it was the Rocketeer. Like, he was born to play it, and we're never going to see it.
There's nothing you can do about that. It's just the wrong era, man.
In 1991, which is when I think this movie was made, he was Encino Man, Brendan Fraser. Like, this is, that's not that many years before Tarzan. This man could have been the Rocketeer. And they blew it completely.
Yeah. I've got nothing for you. I mean, Billy Campbell is terrible. Like,
that should be another, that should be another thing. Movies Brendan Fraser should have started.
I mean, we can just start naming stuff. I mean,
Armageddon. He could have played Ben Affleck's role perfectly in Armageddon.
He could have also been Deep Impact and played Morgan Freeman. Wait, what?
I'm just joking. No.
I'm just joking. The crux of Deep Impact was that black president, the world explodes. Like, that was what happens.
Morgan Freeman is the reason he opened the door for Barack Obama. I think that's fairly clear.
100%.
100% clear.
Dreams of my Freeman.
Oh, wow.
Is that too much? Is that too far?
Yeah, that's a little.
The only way I know the line is to tread on it. So now I know.
So I'm going to blow past that. And we'll talk about some more terribly racist things that Hollywood's doing. And that is the trailer for The Great Wall starring Matt Damon. I actually saw this trailer. This is right, was before the Bourne movie. Obviously, that makes a lot of sense why they would do this. And Matt Damon is somehow I think he's European. I don't think he's supposed to be Asian in this one. Thank goodness that at least we don't have to deal with that again. But he's some European that he's come to help defend the Great Wall from something. Ooh.
It's not Mongolians.
So that was the funniest thing about this. That was the funniest thing about this entire trailer. Is it brings up all the stats about the Great Wall. It was, 15,000 miles long, and it took 1,700 years to build. What were they trying to keep out? As if that's a historical question. As if that's a question that that historians just sit in their offices filled with mahogany and ponder. What were they trying to keep out? They were trying to keep out northern folk. That's it. That's the answer to that question. So they've built an entire movie around a premise that makes no sense. There's no question. Like, why were they building the pyramids? That's a legitimate question, right? That seems pretty grandiose to just bury some dude. Maybe there was something going on there. Why'd they build the Great Wall? Because they didn't like the Tartars, or the Tartars, or whatever their name was, or the Mongolians. They didn't like any of them. They didn't want them coming down and destroying them. That's why they built it. Why are you building a movie around this? There's no question why they built the wall. And so from that moment on, I was out completely. I don't even know what the rest of the trailer said. I was blind rage. I have no idea what was going on.
There was a dragon on the other side of it, is what it was. They're keeping
fantastic.
Out a dragon.
Yeah,
they're keeping
fantastic.
Out a dragon.
Of course
yeah, I think I don't know why we put this in the show. It's my fault. There's very little to say about this other than this is terrible and it should be hated.
Why can't we have Asian people as leads in Asian movies?
I don't,
why does it always have to be white folk? Why is Keanu Reeves and Tom Cruise and Matt Damon leading these movies? It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I think the one thing that this does bring up is the influence of the Chinese market, because this is a co-production across China and the United States. It's co-produced by, I think, Legendary, and then a Chinese production house that I don't even want to venture to try to say. Kava Productions. I don't know.
It's probably a subsidiary of Alibaba. So you could just say it's a subsidiary of Alibaba.
Alibaba is not listed anywhere on this.
Everything's a subsidiary of Alibaba.
Okay. Well, yeah. So there you go. But yeah, so I think it's going to be interesting.
That was a global finance joke for all of the global finance people
out there. Man. It's getting deep. Yeah. Didn't Alibaba co-produce Star Trek?
Maybe. I don't even know. I don't know what they really do except for like sell machinery and building materials on like as a wholesale, like the Amazon of building materials. That's the only thing I know they do. But I know that they have a group that owns everything.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
That's all I know about that.
Alibaba Pictures Group. Yep.
I guarantee you they make movies.
Yeah.
I told you they made movies.
That's a perfect segue, Raymond. Let's just jump right in. Speaking of Alibaba Productions.
We have Star Trek. Who, by the way, has an Asian person in a primary role, unlike the movie about the Great Wall of China.
Oh, man.
So we both got a chance to see Star Trek. I saw it about a week ago. So it's a little less fresh in my mind than it is in yours. But I think it's safe to say that we both kind of felt meh about the movie in general. So before I put words in your mouth, kind of give me your overarching thoughts.
My overarching thoughts, and I wouldn't even say I felt meh about it. I would say I was legitimately disappointed, verging on upset.
This is a win for me, by the way.
Well, whenever we talk about Bourne, I can just rebound and shake my fist at you, because we'll just trade being right on that one.
Yeah, but no, Bourne was terrible. Yeah,
we were sitting in the theater, and I looked at my wife after the film, and I said, "What did you think?" And her exact words were, "I'm almost angry that I'm this disappointed by this film," and that was when I knew I married the right woman. It's been 3 years, so it's pretty sure we're going to be together for a long time, but no, it's like, there was very little about this film that I felt was redeeming. It was at its best when it wasn't trying to say something, when it was just doing action. It was at its best, but it was so simultaneously heavy-handed and empty-headed about the things he was trying to say. He's trying to say these deep things about what it means to be alive and what it means to be human and what it means to be who we are. But it was like, I'm going to hit you over the head with this very hollow thought. Because the thoughts and the things that they were trying to portray and communicate were just asinine. Just dumb. I mean, you can see Justin Lin's Fast and Furious background, because some of the action sequences were dynamite.
Do you know what's funny? I know that it's an easy critique because of the director. This was Fast and the Furious in space. Like, everything you just described is Fast and the Furious. It's a lot of telling us why we should care about the characters instead of getting us to actually care about the characters. And so they tell us why we should care about the characters, and then they have big, ridiculous action sequences, like, spoiler alert here, because I have to give an example. When the ship fell on a human, I mean, not a human, on a person, the ship fell on that's the death, is that you were fallen on by a ship. Like, it was the most ridiculous thing ever. But then in between those action sequences, there was a lot of, you need to care about us because we say that you should care about the things we're doing. And there was no real reason to do that.
Yeah. And I just, watching this movie reminded me of the Trivia Bowl scene in Billy Madison, where he says that at no point in your ranting, did you have anything of a coherent thought. And may God have mercy on your soul. Like, that's what that felt like. Sitting at the end, like, and I wish my wife was on this show, because she enumerated my feelings so well on this movie, that it was just like, the characters were flat. They were like you said, they told you what their character journey was. They didn't show you any of it. Nobody acted at all in this film, if you ask me. I think there were a couple of scenes where I think Carl Urban and Zachary Quinto did a little bit of acting, maybe. They were like, they're paying us for this, so maybe we should act. But Zoe Saldana was awful. Like, there was no emotion whatsoever. Chris Pine was just, he overshatnered to so much that he forgot to act. He shatnered really hard in a couple of scenes. And so he became, honestly, the only person that I even cared about remotely was Sulu, I think, for a little bit. Just because I love the way John Cho has been playing that character, just kind of as this, like, for lack of a better term, just BA pilot that is, like, so sure of himself and so confident about his skills. that he can just completely assume the captain's chair and not miss a beat. Like, that was about all. And, you know, it was cool seeing Anton Yelchin, you know, rest in peace and all that. But again, it was just, there was no substance to it. It was very hollow.
You know what really upset me, I think, is that there was the bones of a really, really good movie.
Yes.
In this movie. There, it existed. But the problem I think they had is that they tried to fit way too much into one movie. Like, there were a lot of threads that would have been interesting if they spent some time pulling them. So I think that this could have been an interesting two-part movie. I'd like to know more about Kalara, the bait, as it were. I'd like to know more about her. I'd love to know more about Krall's backstory. I'd love to know, like, or how he was doing the things he was doing, how he was still alive. They kind of, like, yada-yada'd it, right? Mm-hmm. I'd love to know more about that. I'd like to see more interaction between Spock and Uhura, who are obviously going through some stuff. It'd have been good to see. I'd like to see more interaction between Scotty and Jayla, which I think there was something there, right? Mm-hmm. And they just completely went over it. There was so much stuff there, and they just completely yada yada'd so much of it.
Yeah.
And I understand that we live in a time now where every movie has to have, you have to fit all three acts in every movie, and it has to have a beginning, middle, end, conclusion, resolution, and that's what we have to do. But this seems like a story that would have been much better told over two movies than it would be over one. And so they've ended up now with one bad movie that kind of puts a big dent in the franchise. By the way, a franchise I didn't think much of to begin with, but still puts a big dent in the franchise. So I think they did a really poor job with this. And I wish that there was someone there to kind of like to step back and say, this is just too much. We have to figure out a way to either have two movies or tell a smaller story so that way we could actually tell it well.
Like, I would have loved to see a movie of Kirk coming to grips with the fact that he wants to be in space. And, like, that was what this movie should have been, was Kirk coming to grips with who he is. Like, that's really been – and maybe that's what upset me. Now that I'm thinking about it, like, the fact that Kirk is still wrestling with this – after two films of wrestling with this, like, they basically just undid two full films of character development and then crammed it all into one scene in a bottle of whiskey. Like, that's what it was.
A scene that, by the way, felt like it was shot after the movie, right?
Yeah, it felt completely separate.
That scene felt like it was, like, someone came in and that was part of the reshoots. It really felt like that scene was out of place.
Yeah, it looked different. It felt different. That was one of those spots where I feel like Carl Urban tried to act a little bit. But I think Chris...
Can I say something about Carl Urban?
Go ahead.
I know you love him. That character drives me insane.
That's why my wife thinks that you're an amazing person, because she agrees. She hates Bones.
I hate Bones. He's become such a caricature of himself. Mm-hmm. I hate Bones so much. I think every minute he's on screen makes me angry. It's such an annoying character.
I mean, you're allowed to have your opinion. I mean, your opinion is wrong, but you're allowed to feel, you know, whatever way that you would like to feel about that, Raymond. I mean, I will give you that Carl Urban is doing. he's doing more of a DeForest Kelly impersonation than he is acting. You know, he DeForest Kelly is so old South, and so I think he's doing so much of a DeForest Kelly and not as much acting. Again, I feel like there was no soul to this movie. I feel like there's nothing to make me care about anything. There's nothing to make me care about any of the characters, any of the actors. Like, I don't want to see action just for action. You know, granted, maybe you and I are in the minority. Because we're on Fast and Furious 15, and you know, people are still going to see those movies. And talking about
I'm going to get the actual number, but it's Star Trek Beyond is really highly ranked.
It's in the 80s.
On Rotten Tomatoes, and I have no idea how. Like, I don't know.
Critics and audiences love this thing. I don't get it. I really don't. Another podcast that I listen to, they went on and they, you know, one of the hosts liked it. One of the hosts was like, I didn't hate it, so I can't say it. Their rating scale is either best movie ever or worst movie ever, because that's how the internet treats things. So it's like, well, I didn't hate it, so I can't call it the worst movie ever. But yeah, it's at 83 on Rotten Tomatoes.
I don't even know how. I'm so confused by that.
It's, you know what's funny? Looking at some of these reviews, it's, some of them, like, the first one on here is like, it's a mess. But it shows you what it can be when it's good. I'm like, no. Like, that, no, it's awful. Like, you can't say it's a mess and good in the same breath. Like, you can't say that. Those are two very different things. And I think in, we can bash critics all we want, but I really think, like, for me, I think the issue of the movie comes down to the fact that it violated, in my mind, one of the number one rules of visual storytelling, and that's show, don't tell. You know, you and I both have journalism degrees, and in my broadcast classes, every class it was show, don't tell, show, don't tell. If you've got good video of it, why are you talking? And so show me that these characters are emotional. Show me these characters are dealing with something. Make them believe it. Don't tell me that Kirk is struggling with identity. Show me how that happens. Show me how that manifests itself. Show me what the discoveries are. You know, when you were talking about this could have been better served as two movies, it really feels like it should have been like three episodes of a Star Trek TV show. Like, I would love to see this as like three episodes of STD, you know? Sorry, I had to bring that back. Like, it just felt like it was, it just felt disjointed. And I even think, like, when they tried to do things, like, I could go on and on, but like the Leonard Nimoy thing felt forced, and it felt like
they went back to it like seven times.
Yeah.
Like seven times.
It was a central piece of the plot. Like, all of Zachary Quinto's character movement in this film was precipitated by Leonard Nimoy's passing. Like, it felt like they didn't have an idea for a Spock subplot, and then Leonard Nimoy passed away, and like, cool, there's our subplot. Like, it felt like very, very thrown together. I have very few words about. I don't know what to say.
I think the whole thing, I think Jayla's the new character who seems like she's going to be around for a while. I think her story arc is a perfect microcosm of this movie. We meet her. She seems cool. We don't really have anything to do with her. They go through 3 seconds of character development. You find out that her family died and that she hates this one dude and that's evil. And then they end it at that. And then at the end of the movie, she fights this dude. And I keep calling him this dude because I have no idea what his name was. He was just a dude that was in the background. Do you know his name?
No. Manus?
Something like that.
You're talking about Krall's
secondhand
henchman.
Dude.
I think they said his name once in the movie.
Exactly. So this guy, she builds up the entire movie is her build up to fight this dude that we don't know his name, but all we know is he's evil. But the only reason we know he's evil is because they told us that he was evil. And we get up and he goes and fights this dude, and we're supposed to care about who wins it.
Yeah.
That is a microcosm of the movie. That is why the movie was terrible. That whole story arc explains why the movie was terrible. And by the way, they could have expanded her story if they had more time. But they didn't have the time, and so we yada yada through the whole thing, and at the end, you just don't care. And that was such a perfect metaphor for the entire movie that's really the best way to describe why it's a terrible movie.
Yeah, and I think this goes to show you that when you have a script that gets rewritten so many times, you kind of get a mess. Because this is a Star Trek film that had, you know, Roberto Orci wrote a script to it, And then they get in there and they didn't like it. So Simon Pegg rewrote it. And I think maybe the same thing happened with the Star Wars prequels, where you're too close to it, and so you can't see its flaws. And again, maybe we're wrong, Raymond. I don't think we're wrong, but so many people love this movie that I just, you know what? It maybe it's doing something right, or maybe we're in a world where we've officially embraced style over substance. And well,
I know we have, because Mad Max Fury Road was everybody's favorite movie last year, and it wasn't good at all in any way. And I stand by that opinion. I will stand by that opinion to the death. That movie was not good. The essential plot of that movie was they left a place and then they drove back to it. That's the plot of that movie. They left a place and then they drove back to it, and they said about 7 words on the way. And everybody's like, ah, that movie's awesome. It looked cool. I'll agree about that. Guitar Man was kind of cool. I'll agree about all that. It was not a good movie. It was not a good movie at all. There was nothing happening. There was no plot. I didn't care about any of the people that died. I don't care. That's what Star Trek is. Star Trek is this year's Mad Max, and they're both terrible movies. And I'm really nervous about the future if these are the type of movies that critics have decided that they like, because these movies are bad, and they should not be getting 80 and 90% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we'll see how this goes. I think for every Mad Max, for every Star Trek, you've got, a movie like Captain America that has the style and the substance. So I think there's a lot of hope for people that are doing it right. So I don't necessarily – I mean, you've got movies like The Martian that had – style and substance, you know.
The Martian was great. Oh, that was such a good movie.
The Martian is my new poster child for why the Academy Awards are broken. Because there's no reason why Ridley Scott was not nominated for Best Director for that film. That is one of the most visually stunning films I've ever seen in my entire life, and we will ever see for the next decade.
The Martian is higher on Rotten Tomatoes than Star Trek. If it wasn't, I'd have thrown a fit.
Raymond quits. Raymond quits. No, I think, yeah, like, we could talk about The Martian for forever, because I adore that film. But no, I think we've got to get past, and this could turn into a big statement on society, we've got to get past, again, I said it before, the style over substance about, you know, flash and no... nothing between the ears. Like that's what it is. And so I'm interested to see what Suicide Squad does, because that could be another one that's a lot of style and no substance. I don't think it will be, because this is going to sound contradictory after what we just said, but Tom Hardy makes very few bad movies. Tom Hardy, in spite of what you think about Mad Max, the dude doesn't take on movies that he doesn't believe in. And so he was initially slated to play Rick Flagg, and he was frustrated that he couldn't because of other commitments. So yeah, I'm intrigued, to see where this goes. 'Cause yeah, we could turn this into a whole statement about what's wrong with society. We could really dump on Star Trek Beyond anymore. I think this is a complete, this is a complete picture of why I think you can't try to recapture lightning in a bottle. I think the Star Trek reboot was kind of a lightning in a bottle situation. It's just it hit people at the right time. It was fresh. It was fun. It was something new. It was exciting, but it also had a lot of heart to it.
Chris Pine still had a chiseled jaw.
Chris Pine was fantastic. I mean, it took a lot of what was great about the original Star Trek and moved it into a 21st century context. And then you see Into Darkness that tried to do some similar things, and it, you know, with varying degrees of success, say what you want about Khan. I think if they hadn't lied to us the entire time about Khan, people would actually love that movie. And so I think I think Star Trek Beyond is a movie that people are liking because they feel like they should like it, because it feels like it's deep, but it's really not. And I could go on and on about this, but I feel like I'm getting repetitive at this point.
Yeah, let's move off it. We've put enough nails in Star Trek Beyond's beautiful gold adorned coffin because everybody loves it, but we'll still drive a few nails in there. Let's move on to my favorite segment. Do it every week. It's called Don't Sleep. What you got?
So my Don't Sleep for this week is a Batman comic from the now defunct New 52 universe. I think it's amazing that DC is going through continuities like I go through almond milk because I am an old man and my body has stopped processing dairy properly.
Because almond milk's delicious.
Almond milk is fantastic.
And DJ Khalid, right? He's on that stuff now.
There are very few things I'll do because DJ Khaled tells me to.
Drink almond milk is on that list. Get plants.
I was going to say I had a glass before the show and after we're done, I'm going to get another one. So that's where we're going with that. But no, so I picked up for our flight to and from New Orleans to get on our cruise a couple weeks ago. I picked up a couple of the collected issues of Batman from the New 52 doing the Court of Owls. And it's kind of controversial. There are a lot of people that like it. There are a lot of people who think it's terrible. But the crux of the story is that throughout the history of Gotham, there has been a secret society known as the Court of Owls that is running the, that is kind of orchestrating the events that happen, and orchestrating everything that happens behind the scenes. And so I've read the first collected issue of it, and the whole through line of it is Bruce doesn't believe in it until the assassin from the Court of Owls kidnaps him and throws him into a maze that almost kills him. And so then he finally is like, okay, I guess I have to believe now. And it's intricately tied in with his family history, and it's intricately tied in with where Gotham is going. I'm really interested to read the rest of it. You know, I've got the other editions now because I'm stuck. So now I got to keep procuring them. So I'm really interested to see where it goes. It's really beautifully drawn. It's a very visually pleasing comic. There's a really, really funny scene at the beginning where one of the things that I really liked about the New 52 is the concept of the Bat family. I think they do a really good job of it. You've got Batman and then all the other offshoots. So you've got, you've got Robin, you've got Red Robin, you've got Nightwing, Batgirl and all of that. And there's a really interesting scene in the beginning where they kind of play off of the fact that all of the Robins are kind of the same person, just with minor personality tweaks. They're having a big gala event, and Bruce has facial recognition software, and Damian Wayne, his son with Talia al Ghul, says something along the lines of, the only reason he's using facial recognition is to remember who you are, Tim Drake, because Tim Drake is like the forgotten Robin. It was really funny. There's a really cool scene at the beginning where you think Batman and the Joker are fighting alongside each other, and then it turns out that it's a grown-up Dick Grayson with a mask on. They're just infiltrating Arkham Asylum trying to root out a dirty cop. There's some really interesting things going on. I'm curious to see how it plays out, again, because it's really controversial. There are a lot of people that hate it, so I'm interested to see where it takes the left turn into Terriblesville. I'm catching it after the fact, so I probably won't be as emotionally invested. I'm not as big of a Marvel guy as I am, or as a DC guy as I am a Marvel guy. So maybe I won't be as emotionally invested. But if you're into different stories and different approaches to classic characters that you know and love, give it a shot. Batman, The Court of Owls.
So, and kind of branching off that, The Court of Owls looks like it's going to play a really big role in season 3 of Gotham on Fox. They were introduced in season 2. They were working with Hugo Strange to reanimate the dead. And so it looks like they are going to play a large role in Gotham season 3. So it'd be good if you watch that show to get a little backstory on them. Check out The Court of Owls. I won't do that. I'll wait for Gotham. But yeah, if you like that, if you like to read the old comic books.
Yeah, not to spoil the comic, but there's a really interesting portion of it where, and I was trying to figure out when you mentioned that, because I don't watch Gotham, how they're going to tie it into the young Bruce Wayne story. But then I remembered that's why Bruce says that the Court of Owls isn't real early on, because as a boy, he had trouble coping with his parents' death. And so he remembered the nursery rhyme that his dad told him, that if you don't heed their warnings, then they're going to kill you. And so he goes and investigates them, and he doesn't find any evidence of it. And so that's why he doesn't think they're real. So that's going to be interesting. And I wonder, the reanimating the dead thing is very central to the plot so far. So there could be a lot of good stuff coming to Gotham this season.
Yeah, it looks like the end of last season, they took a long and annoying time to get there, but the end of last season looked like we're headed somewhere fun, at least. My Don't Sleep is an HBO show. The Night Of. I've been kind of holding this back for a couple weeks. I knew that I wanted to get a few episodes in to make sure it didn't lose me. I believe it's 4 episodes in now. I'm still on it. It was created by Richard Price, who did, speaking of The Wire, 5 episodes of The Wire. The Wire won't die, by the way. Michael K. Williams is in this as well. Wire's always around. And Steve, I believe his name's Zalian, who's written a ton of huge movies. Schindler's List, Gangs of New York. It just goes on and on and on. I think that The Wire is pretty telling if you're trying to get into this show, because it has a lot of the same feeling. It's very slow, almost kind of maddeningly slow at sometimes, but it always feels like something's boiling underneath. It always feels like we're just minutes away from something crazy happening, from some action. It's super well done. They do a great job with tone and visuals, like we were talking about with Star Trek, show, don't tell. Like the way that they show what's happening to the main character, Nas, the way that they make you feel what he's feeling without him saying, I feel this. They're just the way that it's shot, the visuals they have. It's such a great show. It's so well done. It's also a pretty good takedown of the legal system and how the legal system works a lot of times for minorities, and the way that just the legal system works in general with the plea system, and how people are basically berated into taking plea deals by lawyers and detectives and DAs that all work together on a daily basis and have known each other for years and have this camaraderie, and they basically are almost bullying people into plea agreements, whether they're guilty or not. So it's such a great, which is a big problem. I forget where I read it. There's a great article about that I recently read. Huge problem. So it plays up to that. It's just a great show. The Night Of, I couldn't recommend it anymore. It's only 4 episodes in. You're not that far behind. It's just another Sunday night HBO show that's great, and I recommend it highly.
What did people do before HBO Sundays? For me, you go to church, you get some lunch, you take a nap, and then you turn on HBO. Like, what do people do that don't watch HBO Sundays?
I don't know before, and it's like all year too. They don't take a break.
No,
like something stops and they keep going. It's beautiful. I can't wait for The Leftovers to come back. I love The Leftovers. I can't wait for that show to come back.
I never got into it, and I'll have to check it out. It comes highly recommended.
Season 1 is bad, but. Okay. You have to watch season 1 to understand season 2, which is great. So it's kind of a catch-22 there. Season 1, not wonderful, except you get to see Justin Trudeau in sweatpants, which is wonderful for everybody. But not great. And then season 2, awesome. But you got to get through season 1 first. I have high hopes. We'll see what happens.
You know what? You haven't steered me wrong before, right?
So that is it for us. If you like what you've heard to this point, please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you find the podcast. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, and Tuned In. You can follow us on Twitter at Two Woke Nerds. You can follow me on Twitter at RM Summerlin. You can follow Gerald on Twitter. He's GH Goodridge. And until next time, stay woke.
You gotta stay woke.